We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
You're listening to Setting the Pace. Now, here's your hosts, Alex Golden and the great Kent Sterling.
Pacer Nation, what's going on? Welcome back to another episode of Setting the Pace. Joining me today at 3 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon before the Colts kick off and before we get Game 6 of the NBA Finals is the one and only Kent Sterling. Kent, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me, as always, Alex. I'm underwhelmed by my level of excitement for these NBA Finals. I'm not watching a lot of it, and I'm surprised by that, and I don't really know why. If you're watching, tell me why. If you're not watching, tell me why that you're not watching.
Well, I am watching, and I've pretty much made it a scheduled TV appointment for me to sit down and watch that. I'm telling you what, if you didn't watch Game 5, you missed a really good game. It was a phenomenal effort from both Jimmy Butler and LeBron James. It was one of those battles where two of the top dogs on their teams were just going back punch after punch, and then Duncan Robinson came in and played really well. I think he had 26 points last game. Kendrick Nunn had a nice little spell there in the first half, and Anthony Davis battling injury down the stretch. Dwight Howard, you know, still, you know, liability like always. And then KCP was hitting a lot of shots. I mean, it was a really fun game. So I don't know why you're not watching it, but I've thoroughly enjoyed this series.
I'm just not going to be happy no matter who wins.
Yeah.
And I guess that's the thing. I don't want LeBron to win another title, his fourth with three different teams. Mm-hmm. And the Miami Heat just aren't likable to me, so I can't. I'm not wrapped up. I can find no kind of subtext that would drive my passionate intake of whatever this series is. I feel ridiculous because I love the NBA and I love the NBA Finals almost always. I've watched really maybe, I don't know, maybe if you put them all together, all five games, I've watched one full game. Wow. And that's it. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, I think game one was a little bit of a false hope for the Lakers to get this one done in five, which I was one that fell to that, or even a sweep, because, you know, Bam goes down, Goran Dragic goes down, and then the Lakers beat them by like 20 points that game. So to me, it was like, oh man, the Lakers are just going to steamroll this team. Maybe it was too good to be true. Maybe their Cinderella story kind of came to an end. But then Jimmy Butler, I mean, I tell you what, that guy, I'm not a Jimmy Butler fan when I'm playing against him, but when I'm not playing against him, when my team's not playing against him, I thoroughly enjoy watching him play. And he's just all dog, man. And I love that about him. He's not like a pretty game kind of player. Like, he's not someone that's real flashy, but he's just, right, I'm going to go at you. I think he was 12 of 12 from the free throw line on Friday night. And that's what I love about him. I mean, and he was putting the referees in tough spots down the stretch to call free throws, so or call fouls for him to get free throws. So I tell you what, I don't know all like I don't know how every team plays and what their X's and O's are, but watching this series, it's been really fun. And I think the Lakers, the problem with them is their role players are so inconsistent, you never know what you're going to get, and that's what's keeping Miami alive in this.
Well, and hopefully this is the last NBA Finals for a while that we don't see the Pacers. I know that's insanely optimistic, but that's always my hope.
Well, I agree with that, but speaking of the Pacers, now that we're 3 minutes into this, well, I mean, it's good to talk about the NBA Finals, but yes,
you're I hijacked you for a minute. There's no question.
It's okay, but yeah, your former producer and friend Scott Agnes from the Fieldhouse Files mentioned on his podcast that Dan Burke won't be back this season, and he also said that if any assistant is to return, it'll be Bill Baino. He goes on to say that Bill is a single guy, and he doesn't have a lot of things tying him down. And last summer, he spent a lot of time working out with Domas, and that was kind of the plan this summer or off season as well. So, what are your thoughts on all that stuff right there?
You know, I got to tell you the truth. Dan Burke has been with the team for so long that I'm not sure. I know he's the defensive specialist, mm-hmm. but I don't know what it's going to be like without him. Conversely, I don't know what it was really like with him. So I don't know how this changes the dynamic. I know that you've got to allow a head coach to select his assistant coaches. And the Pacers, for the longest time, have kind of hired from within, hired familiarity. And because of that, Dan Burke has been able to stick around and stick around and stick around. I love him. He's a basketball lifer. He mm-hmm. is a great guy to talk to. When he wanted to talk to the media, and I'd request him all the time, and when he would decide that, yeah, I'll talk to you, he was great to talk to for 10, 15 minutes at a time. Just a wonderfully passionate basketball mind, and always had unique ideas and kind of unique breakdowns of people. But I don't know what this is going to be like without him. Maybe it allows another coach to come in and sort of do something a little bit different. And, you know, at some level, different's good sometimes.
Yeah, and I mean, nothing against Dan Burke, but I heard that the Pacers were kind of upset a little bit with the defensive schemes, not being a little bit more modernized, not changing things up, always switching everything, fighting through everything. And right. I feel like the Pacers might just want to change that up a little bit. Maybe they want to figure ways out to be a little bit more, you know, I guess, different on their defense. Because, like, when they played zone, it was god-awful. They didn't practice it enough. Maybe they want to get a guy, which if they do hire one of those Miami coaches, that can implement that zone. And I think, you know, whoever you bring in, you have to give them that opportunity to bring in their own staff. You don't want to force them to, oh, well, we've had this assistant coach for the last 20 years. You got to put them on your staff if you're hired here. Like, sorry, but if I'm the head coach, I want to pick guys that I want on my staff. And if you like Dan Burke, great. If you want to go with somebody else, it should not be something that you're attached to. And I'll be interested to see if Bill Baino stays around. That's an interesting tidbit about him. I had no idea that he was a single guy, and it now makes sense why he had those blonde frost tips at the bubble. Maybe he was trying to find someone there to to hang out with.
There's a lot of idle chit chat as we discuss Bill Baino, and Bill Baino was relentlessly single. We'll just put it that way. There's a lot of talk about Bill Baino and his singleness. I agree with you about Dan Burke and the schematics. I mean, it just didn't make sense to be basically positionless in terms of size in the backcourt and to continue to fight through screens rather than switch everything. It never made any sense to me at all. I just always figured, I was like, you know what, these guys got to know better than me. But if I've got Brogdon and Lamb and Oladipo and Warren and kind of all of these guys in the backcourt who are relatively similar in size and in athleticism, you know what, I'm going to switch all over the place because why wouldn't you? And yet the Pacers just never did. They were resolute about not switching, mm-hmm. and I just never got it.
Yeah, I didn't either. And so maybe that's why they decided, hey, let's figure something else out and go forward. But J. Michael came out Friday and gave us the most, you know, non-informative report, but basically just said that Oladipo has talked with the Pacers, but didn't go into details about that. Now maybe Jay is saving that for a subscriber, you know, article for the Star, which I don't blame him for not giving that out for free on Twitter, but definitely, you know, interested to see what happened there. But he also said the coaching search should go on for 2 to 3 more weeks, which is going to give us time to keep talking about this because we've talked about this for almost 2 months now. So
yeah,
I thought about this, Ken. I said, well, with, you know, with the coaching search going on, with Oladipo not possibly going to be back, we have till November 18th. Let's start this week power ranking a couple things. So first off, we have 7 coaching candidates that we know of in this right. race. So I want you to power rank the 7 coaching candidates from 1 to 7. I'll read them off to you. I kind of know who you have at the top, but I'll read them off to you. We got Chauncey Billups, Dan Craig, Mike D'Antoni, Chris Finch, Darvin Ham, Dave Yeager, and Chris Quinn. Give me your 7 in order.
Darvin Ham, I've got as the leader in the clubhouse, but he may get snapped up by the Clippers. And if he gets an offer from the Clippers, he's not going to wind up coming here. I know that the Clippers were interested in talking to him. The Pacers have spoken to him. Darvin Ham has a previous relationship with Malcolm Brogdon. Malcolm Brogdon, as the leader of the roster, I think is going to have something to say about who's hired. I think that his choice would likely, assuming that they have a great relationship, and I've heard that they have, his choice is going to be Darvin Ham. So I've got him as the favorite, but it's a tight favorite, but I've got him as a favorite.
Wow, over Chauncey?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I get a little bit hinky about guys who haven't coached at all. I don't know to what extent that kind of affects the search and the hireability of guys, but people who haven't done a job, you really are kind of guessing at whether they can do it. And you might have the belief that he can do it, and you know that he's a leader and all of that stuff, but trying to assess what kind of a coach he's going to be in the locker room and under duress and in the last 2 minutes of a game, I think is kind of, it's absolute guesswork. And I don't know that the Pacers are in the business of guessing this time around with the search.
And that's a fair statement. So I guess, cause I want to fill out your final 7. So we got Darvin Ham, number 1,
yeah.
Chauncey, number 2, who's your number 3, Dan Craig?
Well, I've got Chauncey kind of down the list, tell you the
okay,
truth. I've
okay.
got Dan Craig, number 2.
Okay, so we got Darvin Ham, Dan yep. Craig. Okay, sorry.
Dan Craig, number 2. And I think that Dan Craig, I mean, obviously, he's been with the Heat since 2003 when he was hired as a video intern. He's kind of risen through the ranks. He went 40-10 in his 1 year as a head coach in the G League. They won a championship at Sioux Falls. He's thought to be a really good dude. I like him. You know, you hear him with interviews that he's conducted. He's got a personality. He's kind of fun. I like the way the Heat do business. I think, you know, you can never tell. And the New England Patriots are a great area of example for this, where if you've got an assistant coach who's worked for a head coach, you tend to think that the assistant coach is going to have learned so much from the head coach that they ipso facto become good head coaches. The Patriots have yet to have a really good head coach, I don't think. Josh McDaniel was a train wreck in Denver. Matt Patricia is a train wreck in Detroit. Charlie Weiss was horrible as a head coach at Notre Dame. Romeo Crennel, not really very good in his stop in Cleveland. He starts an interim deal today. So I don't know.
Vrabel's the only good one.
Yeah, and really, to this point, you're not entirely sure what that is.
Right, I agree
right?
with that.
I mean,
he's been good, though, for his short stint. But yeah,
he has. The early returns are good for Mike Vrabel, for sure.
Yeah.
But thinking that Dan Craig is going to be good because he's been with a winning organization through a couple of iterations of that, of the success with the Heat, I don't know whether that really holds water. But it seems like he's just kind of a good dude. Mm-hmm. And I like him, and he seems like a guy who gets along with others well, and I think that that's really important in the front office with the Pacers because that front office is going nowhere.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with that. So we got Darvin Ham, number 1, Dan Craig, number 2.
Yep.
Number 3, who you got next?
I've got Yeager.
Oh, wow, I've got Yeager, man, our list is so different.
he's been a head coach. He was a successful head coach. Now, he didn't get along, according to reports, with people in Sacramento with that front office. But he was really good when his roster was good in Memphis. When his roster wasn't good with Sacramento, it was still all right. They had a decent year his last year. They didn't get to the playoffs, but he was pretty good. And so I kind of like him, and watching his interviews and the way he talks to the media and conducts himself, I kind of dig. So I've got Dave Yeager third. And then I've got then there's Billups, and then Chris Finch,
who
I like because of the way he did things and has done things as an assistant coach with the Pelicans.
Yeah.
You know, he took two bigs and made that work and really put those two bigs in a position where they could both succeed, although different skill sets from Miles Turner and Domas Sabonis. But still, I think from a tactical standpoint, this is a guy who's helped a roster with similar attributes. So I've got Finch fifth. Then I've got D'Antoni sixth. And I don't know why that is. I just can't rank him behind Chris Quinn.
Yeah,
because I don't think Chris Quinn has a chance at the thing. I mean, if you're going to hire an assistant from the Heat, you're going to hire Dan Craig. It's not Chris Quinn's time yet, and so I would kind of dismiss him as a potential finalist.
Yeah, see, when I put this out on Twitter 3 days ago, and I was kind of just brainstorming because really it's like I don't know a whole lot about a lot of these assistants. So that's why I put Chauncey one. I don't know why. I'm just really enticed by him.
Yeah.
Me and you both have Dan Craig number two. This is where I flip-flop with you kind of. Not really. You had D'Antoni six. I have D'Antoni third above some of these other guys just because I feel like after we had a guy come on from Locked On Rockets last week, and I talked with him for about 45 minutes, and what he basically said, which I think you're going to like, is he said when they have a center – that runs in the D'Antoni system, he never shoots threes. And if they're going to keep Sabonis, I thought that might make you really happy. He said it's a lot of pick and roll and a lot of rim running and a lot of, you know, allowing that big guy, if he catches it, to facilitate. And I feel like that could benefit Sabonis a little bit. So that's why I'm enticed by that at number three. And then four, I said Chris Finch. He's really catapulted up my board quite a bit. Chris Quinn I had at five. Darvin Ham, I don't know why. I'm just not sure what he is as a coach. And I thought it was weird that the Clippers came out yesterday after interviewing him and Ty Lue, and then they were like really high on Mike Brown. I'm like, that's the last person I want. So that sounds like a Clippers move. And then at seven, I had Dave Yeager just because I have some concerns with him with getting along with players and getting along with the front office. I just don't know if I would trust that, even though I think he does have some really nice, different things he brings to the table as a coach.
It's going to be so interesting to see what's valued. And one of the reasons that I take Billups and D'Antoni down the list a little bit is I think it's going to be really difficult unless Pritchard is so sold on one of those guys that he thinks it's worth putting his reputation on the line with Herb Simon and with Steve Simon to say, you know what, we've got to pay this guy $6 million a year instead of paying Dan Craig, you know, $1.4 million a year. That those guys, they're cost conscious. And I think it's very easy to make the alternate argument that, you know what, head coaches really aren't that meaningful in the NBA. And to spend $5 million of the Simons money to gain wins with D'Antoni or with Billups instead of Craig or instead of Darvin Ham or Finch, I think that man, you want to get an owner really angry about stuff, stump for spending a whole ton of money and then don't have it pay dividends. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I got you.
If you, because there's like, you get it. You get what you do with a roster. You're not going to spend into the luxury tax. And that's the way it is with the Pacers. So you know what the parameters there are. But with a coach, that's an entirely different deal. You can sell to the fans what you're doing without paying a coach a hell of a lot of money. And so if you're Kevin Pritchard and you're going to spend $5 million of the Simons money to go get one of these guys instead of one of those guys, you had better have that manifest itself on the court or they're going to ask really unpleasant questions. Mm-hmm. And you could, this could wind up being your last coach hire.
Yeah, that's a tough position for KP, and yeah. I wish him the best because I like him a lot. But last thing here, Kent, for this segment, I want to power rank the top five places you think Victor Oladipo plays next season. So most likely to least likely, your top five. That's including trade destinations, obviously.
I'm going to say here, I'm going to say first, because Indiana. I think, you know, okay. Possession's 9/10 of the law.
Yeah.
And so, you know, more often than not, the setting today is going to be the setting tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's most – plus, I don't think that his value is tremendous coming off what happened in the bubble. I just don't see – unless you got a team that's just in love with what he was and can be convinced that he's going to be that again, I don't see anybody ponying up a lot of meaningful assets to lure the Pacers into a deal where they would send Oladipo out. I think that one of the places where that could happen, so I'm going to say this as my number two, I'm going to say is the New York Knicks.
Okay.
The Knicks seem to make mistakes like this. They've got the draft equity, I think, that the Pacers kind of covet, and they might think that they're in a better position with Oladipo than what they could get with that draft equity. So I think that that's maybe a destination where Victor could kind of settle in and feel pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
and have the Pacers get what they want. After that, I think it's a complete crapshoot where he could wind up going. Yeah. You know, I just don't see, I mean, you know, who's got the assets, like I said, that the Pacers covet, plus a need for what Oladipo brings. I don't know what that is. Vic says that he wants hardware. Well, where are you going to get hardware? You're going to go, you know, the Lakers are going to be the team that, until LeBron finally shows signs of age, that's the only place, I think, where you can feel really good. Or Golden State.
Yeah,
I guess he could wind up with Golden State, but I think if it's not the Knicks, I think it's going to be somebody out west.
Yeah, well, I kind of agree with that. I actually only have one West team on here, and it's hard for me to really determine because I've been talking to people, and one of my buddies actually said that he thinks that after this season, Victor's playing in either Brooklyn with Kyrie and Durant, or he's playing with Miami, and I can kind of see that.
Yeah.
But there's another team that I think that could be really high on this list at number one, and that's Dallas to me. One of the attractive things about Oladipo is he's on an expiring contract. And I'll just tell you this, if he has a good year with Dallas and then for some reason Giannis decides to leave Milwaukee and he's like, hey, I'm going to go play with Luka, Victor, and Kristaps, that could be a really interesting team and a real headache for the West. So, I mean, that's kind of where I see that, because I think Dallas wants to kind of get off some money to free up some space. Now, I'm not sure exactly how that would work, but I think Dallas is a really enticing team. New York, for me, is number two as well. I think they're a team that, you know, is just desperate for somebody. And then I had the Pacers third, just because I'm not sure what Victor's value is right now. It's really hard to tell. And then four and five, I had Miami and Boston. I don't think we're going to be able to get anything from Brooklyn for just Victor, and I don't really know if they want to take on Miles' contract as well, with them already committing basically to playing DeAndre Jordan at the five, and then whatever they do with their other young stars, I feel like they could probably get more in return than Victor. So, you know, Miami, if you're willing to take back like a Kelly Olynyk and something else, like, it's not going to be pretty. And then Boston, of course, if they went after the Gordon Hayward deal, which I don't know if they'll do that for both Victor and Miles. So a lot of moving pieces here, but those are my five.
Yeah, and that's kind of an interesting deal, although I would hate to do a deal with Boston.
Yeah.
Because I think that Danny Ainge is pretty smart. He's made a bunch of very shrewd moves. I don't like doing deals with shrewd guys. Miami, I know that people say Miami because Vic's got the house down there. He loves it down there. But I don't think that that's going to have anything to do with what Kevin Pritchard does. Like, they're not going to try to accommodate Victor Oladipo's wishes as to where he's going to go. And I think if any team in the NBA knows that Victor Oladipo's value, at least right now on the court, is minimal, I think it's the team that beat his ass in the playoffs. You know, yeah. I think it's the Miami Heat. They're pretty sure what his value was to them in that first round. Mm-hmm. Dallas is interesting because the thing that we understand and that we look for is like an affinity, mm-hmm. right? So you've got an owner in Mark Cuban who's an Indiana graduate, loves Indiana basketball. But and so that's kind of an easy sort of thing for us to see and value. And so often those things are not accurate. That's not the way these guys do business. But it is the way that Cuban does business. So it wouldn't surprise me to see him get really enthusiastic about Victor Oladipo in a way that, you know, you wind up. Maybe he, in his own mind, could justify making that kind of deal with the Pacers, where maybe he overspends a little bit mm-hmm. on Oladipo, and I think that could happen. I think that's a legit take on a guy, an IU grad, actually doing an IU thing.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not even sure if it's even got to do with IU, in my opinion. I mean, they've got an expiring contract to Tim Hardaway Jr., who I think would be a pretty nice piece here. Not saying as a starter, possibly, but maybe off the bench. I mean, I don't really know. I think Tim Hardaway Jr. is a pretty good basketball player. Not great, but he's a solid guy. And they have other guys like Dorian Finney-Smith, Seth Curry, Maxi Kleba, Dwight Powell. I mean, they have pieces that could be enticing to the Pacers because we know the Pacers will not tank, and they will continue to try and right. win games as much as possible. But Kent, let's go ahead and wrap this segment up. But when we return, we will answer the question everyone has been asking. Did Doug McDermott really develop his off-ball movement and balance by becoming a male ballerina? Well, Greg McDermott, Doug's father and coach, joins us next to answer that question. We'll be right back. All right, everybody, we're back. And joining us on the line right now is Kent Sterling, not Greg McDermott. And we're going to talk five questions, just some random Pacers talk, nothing in particular, but just a random five random Pacers questions. So, Kent, first question, what style of offense would you like to see the Pacers play this upcoming season?
I would like to see them do what the Heat do. Okay. What the Heat do is really interesting to me, and I think it converts to what the Pacers have got because the Pacers are built in a similar way. I mean, you to win in the NBA, you got to have one of two things. You've got to have the best player or best two players on the floor, and or you've got to have five people who really play well together and are very, very selfless and understand that winning basketball is about the other four guys on the floor. And I think that the Heat do that. Mm-hmm. The chances of the Pacers having night after night after night the best player on the floor, the best two players on the floor, almost inconceivable at this point. So I think that they've got to go to a harmonious offensive, share the ball, hit the open guy, pick and roll, pick and pop, get it to the corner and knock down threes. I don't want to see analytics ball like D'Antoni coaches. I want to see fluid movement, and I want to see five guys who are all committed to putting the ball in the bucket and really don't care one way or another who gets to do it.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. And I mean, with D'Antoni, I understand people are freaking out. Like if we hire him, like, oh, we're going to completely just shoot threes and that's all we're going to do. It's like, I really hope that if they do hire him, that's not the case, because I don't think shooting threes, and I said this yesterday, and it's like shooting threes has become a lot overblown in today's NBA. It's one thing where you're opening, you shoot a three, I like it, but I don't know how many times I've seen Luka and James Harden specifically get to the basket and they'll kick it out to a guy in the corner for three instead of taking a wide open layup. And I hate, absolutely hate, that people act like mid-range jumpers are a bad thing. It's like, look, if a guy can hit an 18-footer at 50-some percent, I would rather him take that than try to force him to shoot 34% from three. Even though you might get more points, you're not getting yourself in a right rhythm. And it's good for spacing. I completely understand that. But I think that you have to be able to share the ball. I mean, not necessarily a complete Spurs style of play, but I really like what the Spurs were when they still had Duncan and Danny Green and Tony Parker and Ginobili. Like, you know, they have Hall of Famers on that team. There's no doubt about it, but they were sharing the ball so well. And I mean, even when Kawhi was really their best player at this point in his career, it was somebody else on a different night. And I don't want it to just be predictable where it's like, oh, Domas is going to be the one that does all the scoring tonight. I want to see where Domas can be consistent. But hey, TJ Warren can go put up 30 points a couple of nights, a couple games every other week. Same with Malcolm. And then, like you said, with that Miami team, if they could find somebody to be that Dragic type of player on their roster, who is a free agent next year, by the way, if they could go find someone like Dragic, I think that would be so beneficial. They just need to get guys that are better shot creators, in my opinion, and be a little more versatile.
You know, and this kind of brings up one thing that I'd really like to see the NBA do, and I know they're not going to do it because it would cost owners money, and that is widen the floor. You know, I want it to be 23-9 the whole way around. Corner threes, I'm tired of watching guys shoot corner threes. It's not exciting. It's not beautiful. It's not fun. It's none of the things that the NBA has got to be in order for people to watch in bulk. Mm-hmm. And so if they could widen the floor 3 feet, I think you kind of make this corner three business sort of moot. And you would then kind of heighten the need to be a good mid-range shooter.
Yeah.
And somebody who can go get buckets in a variety of ways. And I think that's where basketball's at its best. And so I think widening the floor would be a cool thing for the NBA to do. But I know it's a pipe dream because you would eliminate some of the most expensive seats in the house. And owners they're not gonna stand for that. Adam Silver, he'd be booed off the stage if he goes to an owners meeting and says, "Here's what we're gonna do, boys. You know, we're gonna widen the floor by 4 feet and eliminate the front row." He ain't gonna dig that. You know, owners are gonna, you know, they're gonna put him on a pitchfork and carry him out of the conference room and throw him in a dumpster, and nobody wants that to happen.
Right, and I mean, I've even heard some people suggest, like, just have the three-point line, like, run to the out-of-bounds line where there is no corner three, so just kind of like the arch. So that would be interesting. I don't really know if I like that either. It's just a weird thing. It's just like, I like seeing three-point shots when they go in, and I like when teams take them when they're open and when they're good shots, but I absolutely hate them when it's all people shoot. Like, imagine, like,
yeah,
you thought Reggie Miller.
Yeah, to do, it's terrible.
Yeah, and I mean, what drives me crazy, too, it's like, I know you said you didn't watch much of the finals, but there's two things I want to bring up here. Number one, Duncan Robinson was in the corner. Anthony Davis contested it in the first half. And Duncan, like, falls in front of his bench after he misses the shot. And the whole Miami team gets up in an uproar. They think he just got completely fouled. Anthony Davis, when you go back and watch replay, didn't even touch the guy. So we have way too many guys, especially the Heat. They do it a lot. They're almost coached to do it, I think. They flop or they try to jump into the defender when they're shooting their threes to go to the free throw line, which that just makes zero sense to me. And then I look at a guy like Anthony Davis, and this is a guy that's, you know, a kind of a do-it-all player. He can shoot the three, he can post up, he's got the mid-range, he's just a really good basketball player. But in some of his post-ups, one thing I noticed, it was when they were trying to throw him the ball, if it didn't go directly to him, he wouldn't leave his spot and go get the ball. And I feel like because he's been such, you know, a hybrid big that's not really been asked to post up a lot in his career and do more so like on the mid-range and on the outside, you know, it's kind of eliminated him having a great back to the basket game where I still think he's decent at it, but I've noticed it a lot in this finals. Like, I think it was game three when the Heat won. The Lakers had like 10 turnovers in the first half, and a lot of them, there were some bad passes. I understand that, but there were some where he could have fought for him and left his spot to get him, and he just kind of like didn't, you know, leave a spot to go get him. So I think there's two things there that could really benefit from just, you know, not shooting as many threes and getting guys in different positions.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a fan of that. Davis is a guy, when he grew up in Chicago, he was 6'2", I think, into his junior year of high school.
Yeah.
So he was a guard, and then he shot up, and so he's got guard skills because that's what he learned when he was a kid. And he's never developed the low post game at the level that maybe a kid who was, you know, 5'6" in the fourth grade would, because he would have spent a lot of time down on the block, and that's where he would have been coached. So you've got a guy, like, you don't find guys who are great at everything, and that's kind of the hole in his resume for sure.
Yeah, so I didn't mean to do this, but my question two kind of piggybacks off number one. So if it's the same answer, I apologize, and we can talk about it a little bit more. And I said, is there a team in the NBA you believe the Pacers could model themselves after? And I think you kind of said it with Miami for the offense, but their defense is pretty good too.
Well, and it's got to be, right? I mean, you got to have five guys connected. If you don't have LeBron James and you want to win a championship, you've got to have five guys who are connected on both ends, and the Heat do. You know, the Pacers aren't going to be able to go put together a roster like the Warriors, or obviously, like I said, the Lakers or the Rockets. They've got to figure out a way to cobble it together with all five guys being foundational pieces. And so I think that the Heat are kind of that team. Although, you know what? We got to be careful, because this was kind of an odd season, in particular the last eight games of the regular season and the postseason, where the bubble's concerned. You know, this could have been an entirely anomalous outcome, where the Heat found a way in the bubble in a way that they wouldn't have been able to find otherwise. I don't know whether that's true or whether that's false. You know, but you've got to be careful modeling your franchise after a team that has achieved a lot of success in this bizarre circumstance. Mm-hmm. But given that that's a valid way to look at it, you know, I think that the Heat are definitively sort of that, what the Pacers at their best could possibly be.
Yeah, there's a couple teams that I look at that I would like to see the Pacers maybe kind of model their team after. First and foremost, I think Toronto is a team that's really interesting. And they've played double bigs. They've also played just one big. And they don't really use their big the same way that Sabonis is used. But they do use Pascal Siakam quite a bit in kind of a playmaking role, as well as, of course, going through Kyle Lowry, who's been a really fantastic player for him. And then when you look at, you know, teams that have that big that they run the offense through a lot, like the Pacers do, it always directs me back to Denver.
And yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah, with Jokic, and then you go out there, and Jeremy Grant is a free agent this year, and I'm sure he's going to demand a lot of money, but if there's a way the Pacers could get him, I would love if they could get their hands on Jeremy Grant, and that's not just recency bias with what he did with Denver. I think Jeremy Grant's been good for a couple years now, but he's not like a star, but he's a really good role player, and I think he'd be a nice fit with this team just because of his ability to, you know, play defense at a high level. And I think they could use another really, strong defender. So that's the other one. And, of course, Miami. And you brought up a great point talking about this bubble season is kind of weird. The postseason is different. And I hate to say this because it sounds like you're being a hater, which I'm not trying to be. But it's like, do we really think that Miami goes in there and beats the Bucks 4-1 if they're playing, you know, three of those five games at Milwaukee? I mean, I think it could be a little bit closer. Right. Same with Boston losing game seven. That would have been on the road, or for Miami, they would have been at Boston. You know, Boston was up like, what, 15 points in the fourth quarter before Miami had this huge run. Like, does that happen, you know, with fans in the stands? Like, probably not, but who knows? But it's like, I don't want to discredit them. Same with Denver. Like, they probably don't come back 3-1 against the Clippers if they're, you know, playing in LA two of those three games. It's like, it's the bubble, so you just got to embrace it for what it is. But you make a great point. You don't want to just model your team after a bubble year team. Like, we've seen it several times. Like, teams always model the champion. Like, the Warriors, you're like, right, oh, I got to get some players that play like that and new style of basketball. But I think Miami is just a really unique team, really well coached. And what I've loved about them is just their ability for the next man to step up. When Adebayo was out, I thought Myers Leonard and Kelly Olynyk together played really well in his stead. Kendrick Nunn has played really, you know, pretty solid without Goran Dragic. Now, they're not the same level, but these guys are still, you know, providing a positive, and they're not so miserably bad that Eric Spoelstra cannot put them in the game and trust them. And, you know, the other thing with Miami, before I let you give me a response to this, is they're just, besides Jimmy Butler and their veterans, they got a lot of young guys contributing to their success, and the trust that he's put in Duncan Robinson, Tyler Herro, Kendrick Nunn, and Bam Adebayo for these big moments is just spectacular, and I would love to see the Pacers do that.
You know, and we give Pat Riley a whole lot of credit with Miami for sort of unearthing Duncan Robinson, and Herro was just inside the lottery at 13. You know, we look at that team and say, look at what they've gotten out of these guys. It's unbelievable how smart they are. But you know what? There's some good fortune there as well.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like in Miami, I believe they had a second round pick that they could have used on Duncan Robinson, but they didn't. And I don't think that they had any idea that Duncan Robinson was going to be as important as Duncan Robinson is. I think that they've had good fortune, and I really think that the Pacers have kind of had bad fortune and have had a tough time developing guys, and that's one of the knocks on Nate, and I don't blame Nate for that. You know, Nate's job is to win games, not make money for these guys 3 and 4 years down the road after they're drafted. So, you know, this isn't a high school program where you're trying to get sophomores to be good juniors, or a college program where you're trying to – you know, maybe build an All-American in 3 years. You're trying to win tonight, and right. That's his job. And so, you know, but that said, they've got to be able to develop guys. You can't continue to waste first-round draft picks on guys who really don't project toward being solid contributors to a championship-level team. Because what are you doing? I remember reading a book called The Scout. Mm-hmm. By a guy named Jim Russo. He was a scout for the St. Louis Browns and the Baltimore Orioles, and it was co-written by Bob Hamill, who was a sports writer still down in Bloomington. And what he said, that the Baltimore Orioles in the 60s changed when the GM came in and said, look, I don't want any more roster filler guys. If you see guys and you think we can win a championship with them, sign them. If you don't think we can win a championship with them, ignore them. We're not filling rosters. We're building a champion. And I would question whether Kevin Pritchard is looking at basketball in that way, given the people that he's brought in. Like, and God bless the guy, but Alize Johnson is not going to contribute. And I know he was drafted, 50th or whatever, but mm-hmm. he's not going to contribute to a championship team. Leaf is not going to contribute to a champion. Aaron Holiday, maybe there's a sliver of hope that he could. Goga Batadze, I think that's more interesting.
Yeah.
I think maybe he could be a championship-level player, so taking him at 18, I'm all in. But you can't just take a guy because he's the best player available. You've got to see a window of hope that this guy with a first-round pick or a second-round pick is going to be a contributor to a championship team, or to hell with him. If you're just going to get a guy, to hell with it. Don't swap the deal or sell the pick. Get out. You know, yeah.
Don't waste a roster spot on somebody that's just going to be there for four years and let him go, which they've done quite a bit. And, you know, I mean, going back to Ikeani Bogu, you got Alize Johnson, probably not going to be re-signed. Yeah. TJ Leaf probably won't be here after this coming year. And really, I mean, Edmund Sumner is probably going to make it, but pretty much, it's just like these guys that you go out and get. You talk about Joe Young, someone they let go, and he's in China now. I mean, just guys that can compete. And I think that's one thing, if you look at Toronto, how they've drafted, I've been impressed. I mean, they've had late picks. They've been in the 20s. They've always been in the playoffs, and they always get contributors. OG Anunoby, I think it was Davis this year, their shooting guard that played pretty well. Terrence Davis, I believe his name was.
Yeah.
I can't remember. And then, of course, Pascal Siakam was drafted there. Those are two starters that were drafted in the late 20s. So you make a great point there. And that kind of brings me to my next question, Kent. Question number three. What is the best way for the Pacers to acquire a star-level player to lead this team?
Well, the only way you're going to do it is via the draft.
Yeah.
I mean, that's free agents, at least historically, they don't come, right? Mm-hmm.
You could do a trade.
Via trade. I mean, maybe somebody's idiotic enough to deal a guy, you know, deal an expiring contract of a guy who is a top 10 player somehow. But if the Pacers had to make that deal, the amount of money they'd have to give up in terms of contracts in order to get that guy, you know, that doesn't make any sense. So I think it's a draft, and I think they got to be really smart about it. And hopefully, you know, Ryan Carr is a guy who looks at it and looks at the draft a couple of years out and says, you know what, I think the top five in 23 are going to be unbelievable. Let's go about the business of trying to acquire something that we project to be a top five pick. And that's tough because of the lottery. you know, it's a crapshoot every single year where you're going to be able to draft, and we don't know from one year to the next who's going to suck, you know, and so it's you just got to get lucky.
Yeah,
you
know? I think that's why Golden State's an interesting team, because we know that Golden State is like, you know, a championship level team when fully healthy. Now, some people might say they're getting older, coming off serious injuries. You can't trust them. But I think with the extended time from the pandemic, they've got pretty much a year and a half to recover all these injuries. So personally, for me, like, I look at a guy like Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, Draymond Green, like, this is a solid team. And now they have the number two pick in this year's draft, and this year's draft is considerably weak compared to many others. And so it's like, look, if the Pacers can get the number two pick in the draft for a Miles Turner level of player, because Golden State believes, hey, Turner helps us more than this number two pick will, because we're in championship window now, I think you got to pounce on something like that. And I agree, the draft, trading up for a pick, because they're not going to tank. So one, you either have to trade up in the draft and get that guy, or hope that a guy falls to you late that maybe has injury concerns, maybe he's been in the league a little bit longer, maybe it's 2021 when these high school prospects are supposed to be able to come into the draft. That might be the year that you decide, hey, we're going to be lucky enough here to have somebody fall to us. So, I mean, it's all kind of, like you said, a crapshoot. And I look at a guy like Jermaine O'Neal, who was acquired by the Pacers for a veteran in Dale Davis, right? We didn't know Jermaine was going to be a top five player or an MVP candidate, you know, 4 or 5 years down the road from, you know, when they acquired him, because he couldn't get off the bench in Portland. Maybe there's a guy like that out there in the league that is just stuck behind some really good players, and maybe they could find that next Jermaine in that sense.
Right, right. And that's what you've got to do. And you've got to get lucky. I mean, Siakam was taken, what, 27th, 26th or 27th? You know, Ananobi was in the 20s, and, you know, and nobody knew whether that knee was going to be right or whether it was going to be wrong. The Raptors, they took a shot. He had all the measurables that would lead you to believe that healthy, he's going to be able to be a contributing guy to a championship level team. And lo and behold, he was. And that's the key, is to keep finding guys who you feel are going to be contributing, you know, members of a championship team. And I don't think that Kevin has done that in the draft at a very high level. And I don't know who's responsible for that, but you've got to change it or you're never going to get over the hump.
Yeah, that's the problem with the Pacers. I mean, we like the pieces here, but we've talked about it from episode to episode. They got to get that guy. They got to get that number one star. I mean, I put a poll out this past week on Twitter, said, what position do you want the Pacers to acquire in the offseason? And the thing that I saw the most was an athletic or a versatile wing. So that's what I'm most interested about. But I want to continue answering these questions. But first, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll share with you a behind-the-scenes story of how Goga Batadze lived with our very own Kent Sterling for close to a month when he first came here from Georgia, and how Kent is now helping Goga obtain his Indiana driver's license. We'll be back. All right, Kent, so you want to go ahead and tell us about that living with Goga experience?
Well, you know, Goga, I thought, like, I enjoy men with Southern accents. And I thought he was coming from, like, Albany, Georgia, or Macon, Georgia. I didn't have any idea that he was from the war-torn Republic of Georgia. And so there were some cross communications between my wife and I, and then the adoption service that we utilized to bring Goga into our home. But yeah, not a good driver. We've got him out and back. He comes over 3 times a week and he drives a golf cart in our backyard. And then we've got him on the riding lawnmower, trying to get him to figure out, you know, you spin the wheel one way to go right and then to the left to turn left. Yeah. He gets crossways. And so we're trying to, but there's no turn signal on the riding lawnmower. So that's something we're going to have to fabricate and help him through that.
Well, that's good. I hope that he gets it before the new season starts. 2020 has not been a great year, so hopefully 2021 is a lot better for Goga and his driving skills and his uptick and just being a all-around well-seasoned Indiana boy. But getting back to these questions here, assuming Oladipo and Turner are the most likely to be traded And both Sabonis and Brogdon, maybe Warren, are the most untouchable guys. Who or what are the Pacers' most intriguing assets that could be dealt in a trade outside of Oladipo and Turner?
I think Aaron Holiday.
Yeah.
Right. Aaron's young, and he's shown flashes. He's a pretty good shooter. He is a tough-minded guy. I can see him still in his rookie contract. I can see him garnering interest elsewhere. But other than that, Lamb has no value whatsoever, because nobody's sure at what level he's going to be healthy moving forward. Leaf has zero. I mean, the guy's past the nine in the rotation, and yeah, most of whom we've already discussed. The guys outside of that, I don't think have any value at all. I mean, people aren't going to – I don't think that there are five general managers in the NBA who know how to pronounce Alize Johnson's name.
Alize.
So, yeah. Hey, can I – hey, Kevin, you want to give up that Alize? Alize look good to me. He's a – what a rebounder. Yeah, so no, I don't think so.
Who were you mimicking there? Was that who was that? Danny Ainge?
Yeah, that's Danny Ainge. Danny okay. Ainge. He spent some time down in Kentucky. You know, a lot of people don't know Danny Ainge was from Murray, Kentucky, and so yeah, that was Danny Ainge.
All right. Well, I mean, yeah. I agree with Aaron Holiday. I think Goga could be an intriguing piece. 19 years old, he's got, you know, the skill sets of what you would want in a modern big man, able to shoot the three, able to block shots. Now he's just got to get some more practice in, he's got to get some more development in. And, you know, a lot of people are, like, talking about Grant Williams and Brandon Clark and all these guys that were drafted after Goga. But one thing I will say is those guys have 2 or 3 years on Goga and college experience. And with the age, I think that they were also given a lot larger opportunities this year. That helped them develop overall. And I think Goga just not being able to find his niche in the rotation really hurt him. So I think that maybe after this season, if he's given a, you know, constant spot in the rotation, you know, he might be somebody that could be intriguing. I think draft picks are going to be intriguing as well, especially when we just talked about it in the last segment. You know, these draft picks for 2021 could be really enticing if this is, you know, the year that you're supposed to have high school players in it. If it gets pushed back to 2022, then that's enticing as well. So, I mean, that's to me is probably the most intriguing, candidates. I mean, TJ Warren's obviously really interesting, but I kind of view him in the same realm of Sabonis and Brogdon as probably the most likely, the most untouchable. Not saying that they can't be had, but it's going to be a little bit more expensive. And you brought up a great point about Jeremy Lamb. Like, coming off this injury, like, if he had stayed healthy all year and played pretty well in the playoffs, I think he'd be a really intriguing piece because of how cheap his contract is. But that injury is just completely brutal. And then other than that, I mean, Doug McDermott's on an expiring year. Maybe that's a little bit enticing. $7 million, not bad for a three-point shooter. But other than that, I mean, you don't have a whole lot to offer as far as, you know, trying to pair any of these guys up with Oladipo and Turner to try to really, you know, garnish something of interest back.
Yeah, I think it's – I would want to get draft picks.
Yeah.
If I'm the Pacers, I would not want to give draft picks. And as far as, like – and I think it's one of the reasons they made a change from Nate is that these young guys, I mean, my God, you've got to see what they can do. You've got to develop them a little bit. And I get what, like I said earlier, I get what Nate was doing. His job is to win tonight, not to, you know, have Goga be a, you know, a third team All-NBA guy in 2027. That's not what Nate was thinking about, because if you don't win tonight, you're going to get fired.
Yeah.
But they've got guys, they have utilized a lot of assets, a lot of draft assets, to go get people who are really of no consequence on that roster whatsoever. And that can't be. Like, you can't have the front office that the Pacers have go out and acquire guys via the draft and then have a coach say, you know what, I'm never going to play this guy because I can't win with him today. You've got to have some kind of agreement in how that roster is going to be utilized. And I think that these guys, the guys who the Pacers are looking at, I think the majority of them are that kind of guy. D'Antoni being the exception. He's going to be 70 years old. You know, mm-hmm. He really needs to win tonight.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, right. I don't know whether he's going to be alive when Goga's going to be a great player, if Goga's going to be a great player. So the clock's ticking for D'Antoni loudly.
Yeah, and I feel bad saying that because I think about 5 or 6 episodes ago, I said something like, somebody's knocking on death's door right now. You know, I'm like, we're sitting over here giving death wishes. It's like, we got to stop this stuff. But yeah, no, I agree with you. It's like, what exactly can be had? I mean, it's got to probably, it might have to be picks if you're really wanting a young player back, you know, someone that's right. like Caris LeVert level. I mean, what I've seen from some people, it's like they think Oladipo is worth Bradley Beal plus picks. I was like, what are you smoking? Oladipo's, you know, basically going to give you 25 cents on the dollar. And it's like I threw a fake trade out there today just to see what people thought of it. And it had the Pacers getting Marcus Smart and Gordon Hayward, and they gave out basically there was a 3-team deal between them, Dallas, and Boston, where the Pacers give up a first-round pick, Miles Turner, Doug McDermott, and Victor Oladipo to get in Smart and Hayward. And basically someone's like, I would never do that. That's giving up too much. And the person replied, they said, well, you have to remember this. The Pacers, with their late drafting, you're not going to probably get a great player. Oladipo's leaving. So basically you're trading Turner and McDermott for Hayward and Smart. And if you look at it that way, that's a really nice return. Then I'm kind of like, that's kind of what I'm thinking. It's like, if you can get two low, I mean, you're trading two starters. So you got to get two starters in return more than likely. And if you can do that, I think that's a win.
Well, you mean just straight up? You get Smart and Gordon for Victor and or do you get a pick?
I didn't have any picks in there because I had Dallas. I had Dallas involved in this deal, and basically Dallas was giving up Tim Hardaway Jr., Dorian Finney-Smith, and Seth Curry to the Celtics with Miles. And then I debated if the pick would be worth it to give up the pick or not. I don't know if Boston would want that or not. But I thought they might. So it's like, I mean, the biggest thing is like Gordon Hayward to me is someone that you could re-sign because I don't think that he's going to be just ring chasing anywhere and taking a major salary cut. But I think he could be a nice fit for this team. And Marcus Smart to me is that alpha dog that we've always needed. And I'm not saying he's like an Oladipo level type of player, but at his peak. But I just think, you know, if you can get two quality starters in return for those two guys, I'm just thinking as a Pacers GM and you're wanting to compete, this makes a lot of sense. Now, if you're wanting Caris LeVert, what are you going to give up? If you're wanting, you know, one of these young studs like a Buddy Hield, I mean, can you know, Miles Turner and Doug McDermott be enough? Probably not. I don't know. So it's just really hard to figure out what is the perfect value. And, I mean, you know, Jrue Holiday is probably not going to be, you know, obtainable. So trying to find a trade that makes a lot of sense, people just aren't going to really like the options, similar to how they didn't like the Paul George for Oladipo and Sabonis trade.
Although, boy, that wound up being pretty nice.
I know.
I would have liked to have gotten a pick, right?
Yeah. You but, know, I mean, when you saw that, you didn't love it, right?
But, pardon?
When you saw that trade on paper, though, you weren't like, oh, I love this trade.
No. No, because I wanted to pick.
Yeah, that's what I wanted.
With picks, you've got a chance, right? You can sell hope with picks. Mm-hmm. With Vic and with Sabonis, it was a little bit different. You know, when you look at a guy like Vic and his – when you've got a bunch of stops, like we hired a guy – this back in the day, but we hired a guy – I wasn't a part of the brain trust that put this together, but a guy named Bob Quessel at WIBC. Bob had never been at a radio station, and at the time he was 58 years old. Bob had worked everywhere and never for at a place for more than 18 months. Mm-hmm. You know what you're getting, and you know there's a reason for that. Nobody valued the guy after those 18 months, and that's kind of where you're at with Vic, right? You know, he's been with the Magic, he's been with the Thunder, he's been with the Pacers, and he really hasn't stuck at any of those spots, and that, you know, that shows something, I think,
right.
The quality of the guy. And so you look at who you're going to get. And if you look at Gordon, and I love Gordon, and, you know, his Butler pedigree, and he just bought the house in Hamilton proper and all of that stuff. But can he stay healthy? I mean, he's a $30 million guy. You got to have him on the floor. You can't have this guy convalesce for half the season. And because then you're prorating it at about what? I mean, you're getting about $1 million a game.
Yeah.
You know, you're getting one game every $1 million. You can't do that. And so whatever the deal would be, I'd want to get a pick because, like we said, that's where you're going to get potential greatness.
Yeah.
And I don't think you're going to do that with the Dallas pick. They pick 18th, but, you know, it, at least you got a chance.
Yeah, this draft has a lot of really, like, interesting things. I think the Kings have the 12th pick, so yeah. Maybe. I mean, I did a fake trade earlier this week with, like, it was a Miles Turner trade. Victor wasn't even involved, but the Pacers basically just got Kevin Love and the 12th overall pick from the Kings, and then Miles went to Sacramento, and then I don't even think Buddy Hield was involved in the deal, so... It was just a different thing thrown out there, and I know nobody likes anything that I'm throwing out there because they think everybody's worth more than what they really are. But, right. You know, I mean, if you can get a lottery pick plus Kevin Love for Miles Turner, and I think it was like McDermott or Lamb or something like that, one of those guys going out, I mean, I think that that's something you have to really consider. Just because, you know, I mean, not saying Kevin Love's like a great player, but he's still pretty good. And, you know, he's been on a crappy team. Once LeBron left, I mean, there's nobody good on that Cavaliers team, and they've had so many bad coaches that have really flaked out there.
Right, and if you can get the 5 with Love, then that makes it okay for me. I've never been a fan of Kevin Love. My son played AAU against Kevin Love several times, and Matt Howard ate his lunch. You know, Kevin Love, there were games where he just didn't show up.
Yeah,
and I don't like guys, no matter what the circumstances, if you're playing in the park, show up and compete. And Kevin Love didn't do that a lot. And so I don't have a whole ton of respect for Kevin Love. I think he's that perfect best player on a bad team type guy. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just who he is.
Yeah. All right, Kent. So we're running out of time here. I was going to do 5 players, but I'm going to cut it down to 3. I'm gonna say a player's name, and you tell me one area they must improve this upcoming season. So, number one, Aaron Holiday.
Aaron Holiday has to become an elite level shooter, to me.
Yeah.
He has got to be able to shoot the basketball. I think you can live with Aaron Holiday's defensive play at the point spot, but I think he's got to become a good shooter. So teams have to sell out to defend him. That opens up the rest of the court. And makes him a substantial offensive weapon, not just scoring the basketball, but distributing it.
All right, next, Jeremy Lamb.
Yeah, he's got to get healthy. Mm-hmm. And if he gets healthy, then I feel good about him. But Jeremy's one of those guys, you know, maybe 40% of the time he's going to have the hot hand, and he's going to put you in a situation to win games that normally you might have lost, but the other games – He's not really any kind of factor, at least that in the limited experience we had watching him play this past year, it seemed like that. Really good dude, really smart guy, good guy in the locker room. I like him a lot, but if he can't regain health and get back to 100% of what Jeremy Lamb was, this isn't like Vic, where 80% of Vic is going to be okay. 80% of Jeremy Lamb is not going to be a roster-worthy guy.
Yeah, that's a fair point. And I mean, Jeremy, to me, of course, like you said, he has to get healthy. But if we're talking he's coming back healthy, I just think that I want to see him in that bench role and really thrive as that sixth man. I think that's the area I want to see him improve. And I agree 100% with what you said about Aaron Holiday. That's why I didn't jump too much in there, because if he's an elite level shooter, I mean, watch out. That's a starter level player to me. Especially if it's elite. Now, if it's just inconsistent like it has been, then he's an occasional starter level player. But yeah, Aaron Holiday, interesting guy. I think with Malcolm's size, they can fit well next to each other. But I just, you know, I think Aaron Holiday is such an intriguing player and somebody I think that could, you know, be really good for this team. But I just don't know if he's going to get enough minutes where he's at behind some of these guys. And then lastly, the last person I want to talk about, an area they must improve this upcoming season, your guy, Goga Bitadze.
I think Goga's got to grow up. Like, I think Goga, because he's 19, 20, he defers a lot. And I think he's got to stop deferring and start contributing.
Right.
You know, I think that that's kind of who he is. He isn't a kid anymore. Don't be a kid. Go play the game. Go be a man and go get rebounds and take your shot and be a not, boy, oh, boy, how do I fit in with these other 4 guys? But, hey, you know what? I belong here. He's got to make that leap intellectually and psychologically to become the contributor that he needs to be in order for him to kind of show what his potential is and play to his potential. He's got great potential. He's got a great stroke. His ability to compete on the defensive end as a rim protector, I think, is at a really high level. I'm really, and you know this because we talk about it every week, but I'm a huge fan of the upside of Goga Patadze.
Yeah, it's like, you know, he can't be leaving his dishes in the sink for Julie to put them in the dishwasher. He's got to grow up, put them in there himself. It's one thing to rinse them off, but oh, no, I'm just kidding. But seriously, that's kind of just how it is. Like, he just has to finish the job. And I think that's one thing we have not seen from him throughout his career in this first season is finishing the job. He gets out there, he does something nice, but doesn't finish it all the way. You know, can set a horrible screen, but then – you know, make a really nice pass or make a horrible screen and then get a nice shot or, you know, get beat on defense, but then, you know, help somebody out with a nice block. You know, he's not afraid to get nasty and he has a little bit of a temper to him, which I like.
Yeah.
He gets a little frustrated. And I would love to see that kind of be unleashed a little bit more just to kind of tick some guys off because he's still young. He's kind of unknown. Next year, if he's getting consistent minutes and he is going up against, you know, let's say they trade Turner, Sabonis gets a foul trouble. Hey, Goga, come in. You got to go out there while you're playing against the Rockets. Russell Westbrook comes down the paint and Goga gives him a hard foul. You know, Russell Westbrook's going to get in his face, and I think Goga's going to get right back at him. He's not even going to sit there and try to play it off cool, and I think that could be some things. So just kind of unlocking and unleashing Goga would be really interesting to me. But, yeah, he's just got to be more consistent. I think you said it. Got to grow up because I think the talent's there. It's just he's got to get the opportunity, and he's got to continue to grow as a player.
Yeah, 100%. And what I do like about both Holiday and Patadze is what you said. And they've got a chip on their shoulder. You know, both those guys they can run a little bit hot. And I think some of that you need, especially if you're going to have sort of laconic guys on the floor like TJ Warren, who can only get, you know, his temperature rises when he plays against Jimmy Butler, and that's about it. Mm-hmm. You know, but if you're going to have those kind of laconic guys, then you've got to have some countermeasure guys. And I think Patadze and Holiday can be that.
Absolutely. Well, Kent, this was a lot of fun. Maybe next week we'll have some more news on some things and talk about that. But we're trying to give you guys the best Pacers content we can while we're still sitting here in limbo trying to figure out what moves are going to be made next. So hopefully you guys enjoyed this show. Kent, you got anything coming out on your website or anything going on this week?
Oh, well, you know what? I did my 7 finalists for the Pacers earlier this week. We'll talk more about the Pacers. We'll talk about the Colts. It's all Indiana sports all the time at KentSterling.com. You know that, Alex.
Absolutely. I know that, but I want to make sure the listeners know that you're not just the Pacers guy that comes on here. You know, you cover the Colts, you cover college sports, and you tell it how you see it, and if people don't like it, you don't care. You just keep doing it, and I respect that. So, guys, follow Kent Sterling on Twitter at Kent Sterling. I'm at Alex Golden NBA. Make sure you check us out at Setting the Pace 3 for our podcast and over on Instagram at Pacers Talk. And we will talk to y'all next week. Peace out, Pacer Nation.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a 4-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Have you heard about the 2018 study that showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? No? Well, now you have. I'm Kat, mother of 3 and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. I remember staring at my prenatal vitamins and finding all these things I was trying to avoid. High amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and unnecessary ingredients. So, at 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because I believe that all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. I'm so proud of our prenatal vitamin. The ingredients are 100% traceable. It's third-party tested for microbes and heavy metals and recently received the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. You see, we trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. But don't just take my word for it. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.